there, Shopper Maniacs. You're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show podcast, all about front end web design and development. I'm Dave, failed deploy Rupert, and with me is Chris, CICD Coyer. Hey, yeah. Chris, how's it going?
CCD Coyer.
I'm doing fantastically, really. You know, in the face of national crisis, my computer continues to work, so that's great. This is a show all about building websites, and we've been talking about browsers so much. You know, maybe we will, maybe we won't. This might be finally a show where we dig into some technology and, I don't know, computing and even servers and stuff in a deep way, because we have an awesome guest who is very knowledgeable about that entire world, Mr. Brian LaRue. Hey, Brian.
Woohoo! Hey, I'm stoked to be here.
Hey. Yeah, thanks for coming on. There's so much to start with. Brian has a kind of an interesting past and worked on some interesting big projects in the past, but let's start with now and then talk about the past and then circle back around. Maybe we'll see how that goes down. But right now you have a interesting startup. You're a co-founder of an app called Begin. Is that right?
Yeah. I work on, my day job is working on begin.com. We do serverless CI/CD, continuous integration, continuous deployment, which is a mouthful. I think the TLDR, we get you up and running on AWS within 10 seconds or less.
AWS. Okay. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say CI/CD on the homepage. But I wonder if you do you avoid it on purpose?
Well, this has been a thing for us. We're still trying to figure out exactly what the messaging is. We love what our tech is, and we thought we knew who our audience would be, and we're learning quickly that it wasn't who we thought it was. So we're probably changing that homepage pretty soon to be a little more webby focused. Initially, we thought we were more of a DevOps tool, but it turns out that the DevOps crowd is a little bit, let's just say, trepidatious about getting on board with serverless. Yeah. But the front end dev community, yeah, there's a bit of hesitation. I think it might be a step too far for them. But the front end developer community is stoked. You know, they're all over this serverless thing. So we're trying to figure out what that messaging looks like and appeals to them. But we haven't. We're doing a really terrible job at marketing. If I'm being honest, we've been largely focused on the tech. No, we are. We could be doing a better job. There's room to improve, let's say.
Yeah, well, I know what CI/CD is. We've had shows on it before. It stands for continuous integration and continuous deployment. And it feels like it's almost become a expectation lately of how things are. I bet a lot of people listening to the show work in an environment where whether they know of it or think of it in that way, it does it that way anyway.
Right. Yeah.
It's kind of like, I don't know, you commit some code and some stuff runs automatically. That's the CI part, I guess. That's how I would think of it. And then if all goes well, it just goes live or at least continues along the pipeline. And that's the CD part of it.
That's right. Yeah. And this is kind of like testing was and revision control before it. It's one of those things that once you have it, you can't live without it. But before you've done it, it seems like extra work. And I think it's kind of maybe downstream of Heroku, the first people to really start doing GitOps and removing friction from deployment. It used to be an entirely isolated step where it'd be like I would write my code and I would test my code independently, and then I would throw it over the wall to some QA team and they would throw it over the wall to some ops team. And this is all about removing friction and lead time.
Yeah, was Heroku the first that had kind of like a command line tool? You'd type like Heroku deploy and it would go out and you'd be like, oh, cool. That was quick.
First one I remember. And I also remember setting up my own Rails apps before that. And after I saw Heroku, I never wanted to do it again myself. So
what was the early days? I'm sure Dave remembers. Like if you were working on a Rails app, you know, many years ago, and you wanted to deploy it, was it largely something that somebody did at the command line, like a configured?
Yeah.
You'd do it from one individual computer, you'd do it.
Yeah, you'd like merge it all into one computer, spin it up, make sure it all worked, and then rsync it, the files, over to Linode, which was cool. I mean, it's a certain, like, you get down to it, like, all these things, it's a server, it's a CPU in the cloud or a CPU somewhere on the planet. And,
yeah,
but but you, you know, just push it over to Linode and then hope that your computer and Linode were close enough in configuration. And then,
it'd go live. For some reason, it felt okay that one computer was doing that. I don't know what, but at some point it started to feel a lot better if like a cloud computer did it. Like we got used to the idea that there was a connection between a repo and stuff going live.
Yeah.
To some degree. I don't know what was in charge of that, but in my world today, I would say Netlify has done a lot towards that goal of like Git pushing is the thing that takes me live.
Right.
And that working in branches is the thing that I can still do, but I'm not going live then. That's just like another way to work because people, yeah, I don't know, like the Git workflow is everywhere. Everybody does that. So why don't we tie that to the process of deployment too? And then if you can get a little bit more out of that, that'd be cool too. Like if a merge request was also automatically a staging environment. Oh, wow. Fancy, right? You know?
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that I'm really excited about. And the old way, I think the predicate for it was databases. So we used to run our databases on the same box that we ran our web server, and we would even read and write files on that box. And then we realized, oh no, we need two boxes. And how do we connect to the database? And I was like, oh, we'll separate those things. And once we tease those apart, that created a whole slew of new problems. But being stateless was a big insight into how we write our code and how we deploy it too. And serverless kind of pushed that to its logical maximum, or maybe local maximum. So we have these tiny little stateless things that are usually functions. And because we split it up into all these constituent tiny little functions, we can deploy them in parallel. And better, we can deploy only the ones that change when they change. So we get really massively increased speeds to deployment, which means we get an increase in our speed to lead time to production.
These are only lambdas we're talking to, right? Right.
Kind yeah. Of. Well, lambdas and maybe S3, and for the persistent side, DynamoDB is where I've landed, anyways. I think there's tons of options. You know, this isn't. I'm never going to say there's one way to do things. There's lots of ways. This is a way I found that works pretty good, and I'm risk adverse, so I like Amazon, and I'm hosting with Amazon because I'm pretty sure they're going to outlive me, so that'll be good for my timeline.
But that's like, I mean, that's nice because it's like when you get into these functions or lambdas, I guess is kind of what AWS calls it, right?
Right. Yeah.
Like you're writing a function like post edit or something like that, or post get or something. And so like, those are two separate files, maybe or maybe not, but like those are two separate files, and you know, your post get function, should, I don't know, like you're not going to mess with it that often. So,
right. No, that's right. And there's a whole bunch of other side benefits to this type of architecture. So we get for free, not only that parallelism on deploy, and startup, but we also get the strong isolation post-deployment. So we can secure these endpoints to the least privilege possible. Your GET request, for example, probably doesn't need to write anything to the database. So you can lock it down to just reads. You know, and that seems like not that big of a deal, but if you think about a monolith, the most secure it can be is the least secure thing it does. Whereas with a serverless app, we can really lock it down on a per route basis, and this can
so much more isolation.
Yeah, and so this can get bonkers because you can run untrusted code now from the user land. So I built a demo app a little while ago called deno.town. So the official deno is this runtime by the guy named Ryan Dahl who did Node, and he's kind of trying to he's doing a second system, as it were. And
his second album.
Yeah. And
the second album.
It's great because it's Node's greatest hits and a lot more stuff, basically. But and I'm bullish on Deno, but that's a whole other conversation. But I wanted to get going with it, and there was no playground. There was no web playground for this thing. And so I was like, well, to teach myself how to use it, I'm just gonna build like a little playground. And I did, and it was useful to me. And I was like, well, maybe I'll just throw this on the internet. And how wild is that I can just throw a brand new untrusted runtime out on the internet. And I have, you know, no concerns about what someone could do with that thing because it's so locked down. And this isn't a capability that we've really had before.
A serverless is obviously of great interest to us at CodePen. We run a lot of our infrastructure that way more and more all the time because of reasons like that. The security is a big deal. People I tend to know that. It comes in the box with some of this serverless stuff. But also some speed and some isolation is great. And the fact that it's like 20 cents doesn't hurt either.
You know? Yeah, the cost is kind of the... Maybe it's the thing that gets people really excited. You get a million invocations for free, and then you get, I think you pay something like 10 cents per million after that. And so...
Come on, that's whack. That's wild.
It's so cheap. It's a lot. It seems like a lot.
Yeah, you can... And so we put them behind CloudFront. So we...
They even get invoked even less.
Yeah, they barely get invoked at all. It's like they get invoked once to generate a JavaScript file or a CSS file, and then we huck that back up the network, and we won't ask that function again for another file until something changes. So it's a really nice architecture for that.
And we've gotten kind of deep in the weeds already here, so maybe we should talk about Begin a little bit more so we can... figure out what you build with it and why and stuff. So I did it. I think Dave did too, you know, kind of, you know, kick the tires kind of thing.
Cool.
So you log in and it's, first of all, it's a little mind blowing. It's like you got to wrap your mind around it first. So let's just see. So I log in, I auth with GitHub, and then there's like a little kind of a builder kind of thing, like a wizard nerds like to call it. Which is kind of cool. I've seen another one. You know what I mean? We're like, yep, step one, step two, step three. But it's not designed like that. It's more like, you know, click the options. It's all nicely designed. Like in the future, we have nice wizards. It reminds me of like StackBit, where it's like a Jamstack version of the same thing, where you're like, I want this framework in this data store and this theme. And this me, and then you click the button and it wires it all up together and it gives you a repo that's like ready to go like that. It reminds me of that a little bit because you're like, I want the GraphQL starter with Deno instead of Node or whatever, and you pick some stuff. And then real quickly, behind the scenes, it made me a repo, which I only realized when I looked. I think I got an email that's like, here's your new repo, congratulations. But the not from you, but even from GitHub, I think, does that. Anyway, whatever. But what's compelling is right after that, then you see like the series of things that it's doing. This is the clutch moment where you see like little like yellow orange lights that are like, I'm doing this now, and then it turns green when it's done. That's all the CI/CD stuff happening, right? Like, I gotta provision some stuff, I gotta deploy it. It's letting you know as it's doing those things. So that's the moment where you're like, oh, I get it.
This thing is it's so interesting because you can learn these lessons over and over and intellectually know them, but you still never know until you ship. So we shipped Begin in March of last year, and it was really focused on getting Lambdas up on AWS as fast as possible. And a lot of people tried it and a bunch of people gave us feedback, and the feedback was, neat, I don't know what to do. And so we were like, oh yeah, okay, so we got to build onboarding paths. So we built these example apps and onboarding paths. You don't need to use any of them, or you can use whatever you want. Really all we're doing is wiring up Lambda functions to respond to HTTP events. And
So Lambda, if you wanted to use it raw, is like kind of a pain in the butt, right? If you just want to make a Lambda, you go to aws.com and find it in their sea of services they offer. I think there might be some kind of online editor for them, but you definitely wouldn't want to do that, right? Like that's an odd way to manage code. So you need some way to like push these things up to it. I remember there was like Claudia.js would kind of help with it. These days,
Claudia, a big player. Yeah,
we still have a bunch of stuff on Claudia and Cohen, but that have since moved a little bit more towards serverless.com because serverless has, It's a little bit deeper. Like it can do your Ruby ones too, because you know, I think a lot of us just assume that a Lambda is Node, and I would bet a lot of them are, but it's not the only language that Lambda support.
There's
more to it.
Custom runtime. We've built the Deno custom runtime, which I'm hoping the Deno project takes over from me officially soon.
Oh, so Deno's like not totally a.
Not a first class citizen. Not yet, but the way they've built it, extending it's so trivial now. So you can bring your own runtime, and many people are doing that themselves at this point. Like if you wanted, you know, to run Node, but with ES modules, you're out of luck. But if you bring your own runtime, you can do that. And
that's funny because it's not like they're little Dockers. That's what they're not, right?
Yeah, no, they're a thing called Firecracker. It's a micro VM. It's the same idea as a container, but it's a lot more low level and just a lot less stuff. It's actually a VM. It's a micro VM. It's what Amazon calls them. And Firecracker is written in Rust, which doesn't imbue it with any natural properties that make it good, but it does have better properties for security and isolation. Done right, and I believe that team is doing it right. Their cold start times are, you know, approaching zero, and probably will approach zero with enough time. And yeah, you can bring your own runtime, run whatever you want. You're right. It's
meaning like, oh, PHP isn't one they offer just out of the box, but it's not particularly difficult to make that work.
No, and I'm actually pretty. Big on it myself. I'd like to see, you know, Ruby, PHP, Python, all those be first class. There's a company called Stackery.io that has a PHP runtime that's pretty popular, and people should check out. But yeah, it's an exciting time because we can take these little tiny functions and you know, use them for the job they're best at. So if you want to have one endpoint in Ruby but another one in Python and another one in PHP, you can do that now. And
that's same repo, same everything, just different. That's pretty wild. So the point is you need something to help manage your lambdas. You just have to. And so begin is one of those things that you're gonna want it to help you get them there and get the permissions all right, and I don't know, help you with staging versions of them and this, all that stuff, right?
All that stuff. So our hypothesis for Begin, and I'm sure a lot of the other layer two cloud providers would agree that Amazon continues to get bigger and bigger. They continue to grow faster and faster. They will continue to add more and more features, and they're not going to get, you know, more tractable to use. You're going to still walk into that console and go, whoa, there's 370 services. How do I compose these things?
I did it today. This will be what happened today. I woke up and there was like a problem with a user facing thing. Right. And I was like, oh geez, what the hell? And you could kind of see in the console that something would go wrong. And it gave an error in the console that was like, it found like an angle bracket in JSON, you know, it was one of those errors. Okay. It's like, I tried to parse this JSON, but I found this angle bracket. That's weird. But I couldn't really figure out, but you could kind of see, like, I need to see some logs. And I unfortunately didn't have like a lot of deep knowledge of who set this up and where it is and how to find those logs. Oh. So I had to log into the stupid AWS console, find the right. I had to guess at the region it was deployed in, because I went to the region I thought it was and there was nothing in there. I'm like, crap. Oh, I guess we use US West 2, not 3 or whatever. Then I found this stupid Lambda and then like had to dig around in there to see if logging was set up, which it was, I guess. I don't know if that's, you get that automatically or not, but it was set up. What do they call it? Cloud Watch or something?
Yeah.
And then found the right function, which I just had to guess at what it was. And then found the logs and then opened the logs, and the logs had some garbledygook, but I found the kind of error and I found the URL and I was like, oh, so something between the Lambda and it was calling out to another service. And while it was calling out to another service, the other service, it was intercepted somehow and it was getting a CAPTCHA page. So it turns out that in between a Lambda talking to a server, Cloudflare got involved and threw up a CAPTCHA. And the CAPTCHA,
the HTML dude tried to parse it. Yeah.
Parse the CAPTCHA page. Thank God, you know, I was able to get into Cloudflare and like put a rule up. It's like, oh, what a hard thing to do. And I don't know if Begin like necessarily helps debug that, but maybe, right? Because there'd be some logging that I could see without it being so obtuse.
Yeah, you're only one click away from your logs, at least. And This is kind of a distributed systems problem too. You know, like we're combining all these small pieces that are decoupled or loosely coupled, and it's, you know, this is just sort of the craft now. We need really good logging and error reporting. The DevOpsy crowd would say this is, you know, not what you want. What you want is observability, so you catch the bugs before your customers do. But either way, you need something that helps you sift through this massive amount of data that you're probably creating with these logs to identify these problems and root cause them if you can. Yeah, this is...
I mean, this one would have been production only anyway, because it would work fine in dev, because you wouldn't have this like firewall in between, probably.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, not to make this about my problems. I'm interested in...
It's relevant, and this is the issue, because I don't think this gets necessarily easier. We probably just build ourselves better tools for the discovery of these types of issues and the mitigation of them, but like it kind of is what it is. They're not at a point yet where we see the tooling like running locally and giving you all the kind of feedback that you want in real time. And it is all about these short feedback loops. Remember when mobile was just getting going, everyone would say, oh, you'll never be able to, you know, do this on your machine. You're going to need to build to your phone in order to test. And like, that was just nonsense. Of course, eventually the emulators and the simulators were going to get good enough. They just weren't in 2008. And it's the same state right now in the cloud. There's a lot of people saying you can't run this locally and there's no way you could replicate this stuff. But it's just because our environments are crummy right now and it's Wild West, which is kind of awesome because I love this phase. You know, you can get in there and start building these tools yourself and finding these problems and fixing them for a pretty large group and growing group of people.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by Cloudways, literally cloudways.com. It's hosting that is backed by different cloud providers. So it's like, let's say you want to like spin up your Laravel site on AWS. You know you want it to be on AWS because it's got the power and reliability and stuff that you want. But let me tell you, AWS is like smurfing company. Like, I don't want to hand do that myself. Me personally, I don't want to be much happier. Letting Cloudways do it, you know, buying that through them and letting them be my support and help through all that stuff. So it's a managed cloud hosting platform. It takes care of all the complexities, lets you just focus on building your great website, your great business, you know. You got your choice. There's AWS, Google Cloud Engine, DigitalOcean, Linode. There's others to choose from. Unlimited websites, pay as you go, free SSL, built-in CDN, that kind of stuff that I definitely want. I definitely want other people handling that stuff. Just everything that I want out of hosting that I know I need it, I know it's important, and don't want to deal with it. With this, you get, you know, peace of mind, fully secure, 24/7, 365 expert support, round the clock, very cool. There, have a discount for you. If you want to try out Cloudways, the discount code is SHOPTALK30, and you get 30% off your Cloudways plan. Generous of them. Check them out, cloudways.com.
I think this is cool. There's so much power in AWS. I think we were talking before the show here, but it just... You know, one of the hardest things I did last year was set up an AWS, like with load balancing and, you know, automatic scaling and things like that. And I think the second hardest thing I did was set up an Azure to do stuff like that too last year. So like setting up all these are very powerful tools, but they're very like, you know, I think Brian, you had said like, it's like different teams manage different products. Routing S, or what is it? Route 53, like the domain routing tool and the S3 storage bucket tool and the DynamoDB tool and the, what was the one, the like Lambda function tool. Those are all different tools. Like, and the log tool is a different tool, totally. Like different team inside of Amazon.
Yeah.
Right?
They've got this, so, the two pizza team thing. And I always thought that that was just like a nice thing the managers say. And, turns out it's true. So this company with like literally something like, you know, tens of thousands of employees are all in these two pizza teams. And as soon as you realize that it's true, the console makes sense. All of a sudden, all these like completely disparate products that have totally different UIs,
right,
completely different conventions make sense because these are small teams moving really fast. And yeah, this isn't lost on Azure. Microsoft knows this stuff. And so they're kind of doing the same playbook. But it's also got some predictable results. We're getting this a lot of sprawl, a lot of difficulty in the implementation, a lot of inconsistency in the implementation side and the integration side. And yeah, it's kind of just how it goes.
Yeah, you log into Azure. God bless. No, but you log in, and it's nice. But then, like, man, I'm just lost.
Oh, I'm
and
the then same
I
way.
Try to find my logs and I'm just lost. And so I think it's a, you know, it's that hard problem to solve. Like, you have so many things and you're trying to put them all together and managers of different departments are fighting for visibility. And
yeah.
But it seems like what you're doing with Begin is like, and you have this other kind of open source thing called Architect, which I'd love to talk about.
Yeah.
But what you're doing with this is like trying to make this whole DevOps portion of it go away, kind of just sort of diminish, but Begin is kind of more angled towards serverless, I would guess, right? But
yeah, no, that's right.
Kind of only serverless, right?
We're trying to push the complexity down and into the invisible layer of the value chain and imbue anybody with these superpowers that the platform offers. And this barrier to entry is largely usability at the moment. It's not really technical. It's more about patience. So there's like, I used to joke about this a long time ago, but there's two kinds of hard problem. There's the hard problem that takes just brute force to solve. Like, you know, I'm going to move a beach one grain of sand at a time, not very intellectually taxing. And then there's like hard problems that are intellectually taxing. Like, I'm going to, I don't know, understand the fundamental laws behind gravity. That's going to take some math. So, you know, the move.
Are we interviewing for Google?
No,
right
no,
now?
No. But the previous one is my kind of problem, because the way you solve that beach problem is much easier than the other one. You can't, you know, I can't make myself a theoretical physicist overnight, but I can move a grain of sand every day.
Yeah, you can chip away at it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think this is one of those problems, and I also think that the cloud providers know this. You know, they're not unaware that they have this issue. They're just trying to race to get as much market dominance on the capability side right now.
Right. And they've already had so much success that it's like, well, they're doing something right. So it's hard to be that critical.
Yeah, no, yeah. For sure.
Well, and even Heroku, it's kind of just a fancy AWS GUI.
Is Heroku a second tier cloud provider too? I haven't heard that term before, but that's what you think of yourself as, huh?
Well, we consider ourselves, we're definitely layer two, but we're CI/CD. So we deploy to AWS, and our paid tier, we deploy to your AWS. We don't care about that part. We care about removing the friction part. Layer two, like a Heroku or anybody who's doing hosting themselves, basically. So if my code runs on Heroku, it in theory will run on AWS, but that'll take a minute for me to port it over. And with Begin, our goal is that, you know, you can leave any time and you're one command away from running on your own AWS.
So if somebody comes to Begin, it might feel like you should just build your whole app here, but I don't know that you don't necessarily think that, right? Like, you don't have to, you can do whatever you want here. This can be a little part of it. You could just run a couple of services over here. This is just to help you get some stuff.
Yeah, it's just to help you get on there. And I think you will find it to be a useful place to build. Like, Begin itself is built on Begin itself with Architect. So you can build a very sophisticated app on this platform that deploys really fast. We want to make sure, though, that we are being honest with ourselves here on what we're building. And we're not building a hosting platform because I think trying to compete with Amazon at their own game would be a bad idea for a small startup, but and also not something anyone wants. So I loved this product, and I'm not going to name it out because I loved it so much. And I was hosting with them for quite a while. And I was at my previous incarnation of this startup, and we got a letter or an email in May that we had 1 month to migrate because they were shutting down. And that was actually the predicate for me moving us a lot of our stuff over to AWS directly, because it was unplanned work. It was a friend's wedding that I had to miss to get through that unplanned work, because if I didn't, then we would have had downtime, and I just don't want to ever go through that process again. And it's pretty clear to me that there's a de facto winner in this world, and it is AWS. I'm sure that Azure is going to catch up, and I'm looking forward to that day. But where I am now, this is just a pragmatic thing to do.
So you can build whole apps here because a Lambda can return HTML too. You know, like sometimes I think of these Lambdas as like not web servers.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they have other jobs, but they can do that too.
Well, this is the weird thing. One of the weird things that we're doing, one of the many weird things we're doing, I should say, but we realized this. We were using AWS API Gateway and Lambda for a JSON API, like most people. And it occurred to us that JSON is text just as much as HTML is. So we started.
Indeed, it is.
Yeah, so we started to do our server render and everything through it, and I'm never going back. It's great for that, and there's no reason not to, in my eyes.
Particularly with CloudFront in front of it, right?
Yeah, and this doesn't opt you out of the Jamstack pattern. You can pre-render, and Lambda was literally designed to work with S3, so you get crazy throughput. Even if you pre-render and you push that HTML content through a Lambda through CloudFront, you can do literally gigs a second if you want. So we're server rendering a pre-act app, and that's in a Lambda function, and we actually do it right now on every request, believe it or not, and it's plenty fast for us.
So what do you think, like right now, usage of begin users is most people just doing the whole kit and caboodle over there? Or is there a lot of just like, I'm just using this as the home for my serverless stuff?
We have seen all kinds of weird stuff. It's as usage has picked up, it's getting quite diverse. So we've seen government, we've seen a lot of like personal website kind of stuff, people kicking the tires, you know, building their first mm-hmm. GraphQL endpoint, that kind of thing. And then there's like unexpected ones that are just way out of left field. And, you know, not surprisingly, we're seeing a lot of people building stuff related to COVID-19 this week. It's all over the map. I mean, you got a infinitely scaling little function thing, and you can deploy it in 10 seconds. So people are building things, and then they realize how quick it is. They iterate quite a bit. And they're experimenting, doing all kinds of weird stuff. Wes Boss last week built a hit counter, a Lambda function that returns an image. And the image increments or auto increments itself, which is like a total, you know, GeoCities throwback thing. And of course, he tweeted it. And then, of course, a whole bunch of kids were like, oh, I'm going to DDoS begin. And they tried and they failed. And they hit us with like, I don't know. The thing had like 500,000 hits by the end of the day. And it didn't even touch our metrics.
No, 500,000. Come on, people.
It was cute. It was cute. And it definitely they brought it down because we lock free tier accounts to only a smaller amount of concurrency that I'm not going to share on the podcast, but it's definitely, definitely discoverable. And
okay. It didn't go down because the tech went down. It went down because you took it down.
No. Well, we just have it. There's a natural concurrency limit on Lambdas of about 1,000. And then you can get that upped, I think probably infinitely. Not infinitely. You can up it as high as your credit card limit allows. But these things are cheap too, remember, and if you rate limit it with a WAF, it becomes unaffordable for the person trying to attack you. So we can definitely scale transparently to whatever kind of capacity demands that you want to meet, but we can also
So we're talking concurrency now, like 1,000, it being hit 1,000 times at the same time, which is an awful lot for even a pretty large app.
Exactly. So these things scale up and down, and the database does too. So It's a new model, and it's kind of how it should be, you know, like how I wanted it to always work. Like, I don't want to care about load balancing and IP tables.
Right.
And, like, I just want to write.
Because Amazon has EC2 too, right? That's probably maybe their biggest product. Maybe, I don't know. It seems probably a pretty big one where you can use, you're spinning up kind of more traditional servers. So if you want to run your Rails app somewhere,
Rails has to run on an EC2. You can't run Rails on a Lambda, I don't think. Is that weird? I don't think you could.
People are. You can. And
really?
Yeah. I don't think it's advisable, but you can. And so over the one thing that we learned is over 5 megabytes payload size, you will have greater than 1 second cold starts. And if you're under 5 megabytes, you will have sub-second cold starts.
5 megabytes of what?
Just stuff. Yeah, that Lambda function. Yeah. Actually, I tested this with a giant GIF, and it still was a slow cold start.
Just really literally stuff. Yeah, just bytes.
Just bytes.
So you can kind of, like, for one thing, you can get a headless Chrome in there, but just barely, right?
Yeah, people are doing that. Yeah.
That's a pretty common one, I find, because it's like, it's so appealing to be like, hit this endpoint and have it make me a PDF or whatever. And you kind of need a headless Chrome thing to do that. But that's fairly big, you know, but it's still cool that it's possible. Yeah.
And maybe you don't care, you know, if you're building a PDF, if it takes a second, whatever, as long as the homepage loaded fast, that's kind of the thing. And this is another thought experiment I like to share with people. When Lambda launched, you had a 3 second window and then it shut down and you had 125 megabytes of memory and I can't remember what the temp directory was, but
let me guess, it's gone way up.
Yeah. So now you get 15 minutes of execution time.
15 minutes.
Yes. And,
I'm gonna compile video.
People actually, I'm not kidding you. People have figured out how to parallelize transcoding video. This number keeps going up and the other number, the cold start number, keeps going down. And there's no reason to believe that those don't hit zero with enough time.
Yeah, right.
And so,
well, imagine if you can run headless Chrome, then you're like, well, why don't I run like Puppeteer Jest, right? Like the control it, but run my, but instead of running the whole test suite, run one test per Lambda.
Right, you know? In parallel. And so the whole put Rails in a Lambda function seems like inadvisable and bad, and you should never do that. But on a longer time frame, that actually makes a lot of sense to me. And I can see that things will go that way. I'm not sure when, but I'm hoping it will go that way anyways.
Sure, yeah. So it's, of all those services in that huge dropdown you open on the AWS console, the big future one is that Lambda tab.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And this is also not lost on other industry players. So compute is a pretty great place to be if you're a cloud provider. So Microsoft has a functions product. Google has one. Alibaba has one.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So if Alibaba does, really?
Is it? Tencent has one. So China's going to be a big cloud player.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by AWS Amplify. You know AWS, right? Amazon Web Services. It powers most of the internet, it feels like. There's a ton of things that go in the AWS bucket, like EC2 allows you to like spin up servers of your choice and has all kinds of configuration. And like S3 is for file storage and Lambdas is for running cloud functions, all kinds of stuff that individually you can set up and use and are great. But there's so much more than that. You know, there's a ton of different things AWS does. AWS Amplify is kind of a package of tools to help you build full stack apps for the web. So it's like, I don't know, just give me the stuff that I need that usually you need to build an app. So Amplify is hosting. You need web hosting. It's got that. It's got authentication for logins for your users. It's got GraphQL as a first-class citizen of it. It's got serverless functions, like I need, you know, the Lambda thing. I want to run some code in the cloud to hit APIs and do whatever else I need to. And it's got file storage if you need it. It's got some machine learning stuff in there if you need it. So Amplify is this, you know, easy-to-use full-stack framework for getting started with building web apps. It's really cool. The auth stuff alone is cool. It's just a few lines of code in there. GraphQL has taken over the world of how to get things from a database, put things back in a database, really front-end development-friendly way to do database stuff. Love GraphQL. It's just built in as a first-class citizen. It's the scalable API. You don't have to provision your own servers. It just does it up for you. Pretty cool. So AWS Amplify is really cool. Definitely worth checking out, especially as a front-end developer. So check all that out.
So if I write some code, I might write module.exports, blah, 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 return hello world or whatever. I write my little business logic and I put it in. That's mostly what I do with these functions, you know?
Yeah.
Or more likely it has a couple of require statements at the top because I'm pulling some crap off NPM that does something cool for me. You know, I don't know what it is. On the case of CodePen, I'm sure you can imagine it's stuff like code formatters and code linters and code processors mm-hmm. that do all this stuff. And it's very, very, very useful for us. It's fast and secure and all that stuff. But you know, all kinds of stuff. Who knows what? The little renderers too, and whatever, you know, Lambda's sweet.
Yeah, the use cases are bizarre.
I don't care where you run it. Like that, it's okay. It runs on Lambda. That's good to know. But really, I just wrote a Node function. And when I run it locally and run all my tests and stuff, I'm just running Node. I don't care where you run it. So I would think if I was you, and I was running on Lambda and then like, I don't know, Google came knocking on my door and said, we'll run all that. We'll run those for you, but we'll do it for a quarter of the price. I'd be like, okay, you know? I don't know. Like, do you watch that stuff?
I know. Of course I do. Yeah. I'm anticipating that we're going to see some parity happen, but it hasn't yet. So the other cloud players are still a little bit behind on this one. They've done a container-based solution at both Microsoft and Google, and they bundle all your functions in one container. So the programming model feels the same. You're still writing a function. But the deployment model and the semantics of the deployment model is totally different. It's back to Rails days where we have, you know, load balanced containers. And so you don't get the Delta updates. You don't get the isolation of the security and you don't get the blazing fast cold starts.
Wow. So it's like a lot worse. It's not like a little worse.
Yeah. Well, from my perspective, and I'm, you know, buying all into this approach of these tiny little isolated zero cold starting stateless functions idea. And the reality of the industry is that we're still back in stateful, large lived, long lived workloads. So over a longer period of time, I totally anticipate both Google and Microsoft are going to have this epiphany and realize that they need to build either a firecracker competitor or adopt it themselves and sell a reseller version of it. Either one of those outcomes is highly likely to me. So I'm kind of waiting for them to do that before I make any calls on what cloud portability looks like. Because given the historic precedents, we think we know who the big players are, but I don't think we do. So back in 2008, I used to think that BlackBerry was going to be a big deal in mobile today. And I was way wrong on that one. But, you know, if you're a Canadian in 2008, that was a very reasonable assumption to make. And a lot of people are making the very reasonable assumption that Google and Microsoft matter in this battle. And yeah, I think we got to wait and see a minute what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it could be like Alibaba serverless or something shows up.
Totally.
And that's just what we use now or something.
Well, that's one layer. Isn't the other layer Node? I mean, to some degree, if you're just writing Node code, that some other player can come along, but it's not that bad for us because we still wrote our stuff in Node. And if the Node layer changed, that would be even weirder.
Yeah. No, this is real. And possibly also the way to get portability. And the final boss for this will still be your database anyways. So you could have the blazing fast, you know, ubiquitous compute layer, but you're still going to want to have that as close as possible to your database to have low latency.
We should talk databases in a minute, but it's interesting to hang out on this like cross company thing for a minute.
Yeah.
I think we've all seen this. I think just in past conversation, but there's this famous gist, or at least it's famous to me. It doesn't even have 1,000 stars, but I love this. And a lot of this stuff I know thanks to my coworker Alex too, by the way, who's just very deep in this world and also extremely bullish on the like Amazon and AWS Lambda. Like this is where things are going and it unlocks a lot of awesome capability. Anyway, a while back he pointed to me this Steve Y or Steve Yegi or something has this Google platform rant. It is nine years ago he wrote this thing, but it feels like he could have wrote it any day because it feels very precedent.
He really called it. Yeah.
It's a beautiful essay, I think, and it's really call out because he worked for both companies, right? And so this is what it says, like in a nutshell, at least to me. I'm sure other people could take different parts about it. But he says, Google does everything right and Amazon does everything wrong. But Amazon does one thing right that matters so much that nothing else matters, and it's that they dog food everything. every part of their system communicates with APIs to each other. So everything has to work, because if it doesn't, it falls apart. Whatever, you know what I mean? Like it, yeah. Everything is dependent on these APIs. And that's so fundamental that they use their own stuff for everything that they build, that it all works because it has to.
Yeah,
and Google doesn't do that, and that thus they're behind. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say their first customer is Amazon.com. And all of this stuff is running Amazon.com. So if you're wondering, you know, will DynamoDB scale for me? The answer is yes. It's going to have the same capabilities as Amazon Shopping Cart. And they're doing pretty good. So it's a wonderful insight that they had early on, that they could build in this tiny teams that only communicate through published APIs with strong logging and strong security. And it just, they also got lucky in that no one competed with them for about 7 years. Amazon Web Services launched, and it kind of hit the floor like a wet towel. Everybody thought it was like, oh, I'm not going to host with a retailer, and oh, Google's going to be the one that does this because they've got the best infra. And everyone just ignored them for many years, and they got such a big lead on the technology and the infrastructure rollout. But the sleeping giants are awake now, and the investment's happening in a big way.
Right, but even if you're Google and you say like, okay, we're gonna do this, we're gonna compete, and we're gonna win this race, there, it's one thing to say, okay, well, we know what the customers want now. This industry is shaken out a little bit. Let's build it. Mm-hmm. That still doesn't work unless you dog food it. Unless you really put it through the ringer yourself, then you may not have a chance of catching up. But we'll see. I mean, they still could. It's just at the moment, it doesn't feel like that.
No, I mean, I think they're going to be fine. I think Azure is definitely the other one to watch if you're paying attention to two clouds. But Gartner and Forrester just released studies on their respective kind of views on the cloud. And Forrester's was called like something about the analysis of Fastage. I'll try and send you the link. It's a great read. And it breaks it all down. The sleeper there for me was Amazon's number one. Number two is Azure. This was expected. And number three is Tencent for cloud functions. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, okay. I gotta get on this Chinese cloud thing because I'm totally asleep at the wheel. I would have thought that would have been Google for sure. But the analysts are now calling Chinese hosters. To be ahead of even Google. So it's early days. It was the same thing in mobile. I mean, I remember BlackBerry and Nokia and Microsoft making fun of Apple and Google's entry into mobile. And here we are 10 years later, and nobody talks about Nokia or BlackBerry anymore. So.
You weren't just a casual observer of that market either, right? You are involved with the phone gap.
Yes. Yep, that definitely deeply informs a lot of my thinking on this stuff. I weirdly ended up working on mobile for about 10 years, and it was awesome. I loved it. It was a complete accident, but it was a good accident of history. I was born in the right place and time for both the BlackBerry to get popular in Canada and then for the iPhone to dethrone it and to be a web developer, you know, starting in the 90s to today. So, yeah, we accidentally fell into that phone gap thing. And interestingly, that led me to serverless too. We built out a
did it.
Yeah, so we built out this thing called PhoneGap Build, which let you upload HTML, CSS, and JavaScript to an internet web point, and we would spit out an iPhone app on the other side. And that got really, really popular. And we had to keep that thing running. It was a Rails app that I had like duct taped and band-aided together with Andrew Lunny, and then other people were maintaining it for years. But it grew to a point where I realized that I never wanted to work on a load balanced server architecture ever again. And then serverless happened, and I was like, oh, sweet, I don't have to.
Is it so? Load balancers are they totally irrelevant in Lambda land? They kind of are, right?
In Lambda land, yeah. Although you can use Elastic Load Balance or Application Load Balancer as a way to call Lambdas. And there are situations where you might want to do that. One situation might be that you're moving an app over that's already behind ALB, and you're just taking an endpoint at a time or something like that. So there, yeah, there's still use cases for it, but this is definitely something I would classify as undifferentiated heavy lifting. You know, Amazon does orchestrate a load balanced operating systems as a matter of course for their Amazon.com property. So there's no sense in me doing that if they rent out that capability. I'd rather outsource that to them. They're a bigger provider. They can do a better job of it than I will. And I can focus on my app logic and my runtime code.
Yeah, the more of that last thing, the better, right? I don't want to think about anything. Almost nothing do I want to think about.
Yeah, that's pretty. Yeah, that's the goal state, right? I want to go home at 5. I want to know that this weekend my servers aren't going to blow up for some unforeseen reason.
Can't.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we alluded to the data battle a little bit. Begin does not have any opinion, I don't think, about where you keep your data, right? Nor does it necessarily help you with that. Is that right? Because that's a weakness, but nobody does.
No, we do. We're just terrible at marketing and haven't made this obvious, but you have for your app a DynamoDB table sitting there.
Oh, you just automatically get a DynamoDB table? Oh, wow.
You do, but you have to use a client that we provide called Begin Data, and it only has 6 methods. We modeled it after Redis a little bit, so you can increment a property on a JSON object, you can decrement an object property with an atomic counter, and get set. Oh, and destroy, increment, decrement.
So it's CRUD with increment and decrement, CRUDed?
Yeah. So we wanted to give people a key value store, and we initially gave folks that access to Dynamo, and they were like, whoa, this is really hard to use and way too complicated for my use case. I just want to use X, and X being, you know, whatever, Postgres or FaunaDB perhaps or whatever. And you can do that. We're not stopping you from doing that. But we do think for Lambda anyways, you want to use DynamoDB. It's got the best performance out of all the databases, and it's designed for this use case. So we just give you access to that. You can read and write data to and from it.
So it goes on Dynamo, but you're limited in its powers or something?
Yeah, you have to use this client. And the reason we do that is because this is an interesting capability of DynamoDB. You can lock down a Dynamo table to a row and an attribute if you want. And so in our free tier, we have a Dynamo table that everyone's on, but every app is only scoped to read and write certain rows from that table.
Whoa.
I know.
That's wild.
Isn't that crazy? So you could never do this before, but you can do this with Dynamo.
It almost like skeeves me out a little bit. Not that it should, because don't listen to me, but like the fact that my data is just sitting in the next row down is just some other app.
It is. Well, who cares? It would be in any kind of shared host anyway. So the solution to this is to use your Amazon account to upgrade, and we'll deploy to your AWS, and you can use as many Dynamo tables as you want without fear. But we wanted to give people this capability because eventually we're going to be opening up other things that you can do with AWS Lambda that require state. And this is the way to go. So the other nice thing about Dynamo, you get guaranteed single-digit millisecond latency. So no matter how many rows you have in that database, it will always return within 9 milliseconds. And that's a big deal. Any other database, you know, that's a variable number that usually is measured in seconds. And so if you want to build a real-time app with, like, let's say WebSockets, you're going to need a tool like Dynamo. So this has been our motivation for having that at hand.
And the fact that it's you're still modeling your data and doing whatever the heck you want in there. You could put GraphQL in front of it if you want, right? All that stuff is available to you.
Yeah, we've got, if you go to learn.begin.com, we've got a big tutorial on how to do all the cruddy, cruddle, resty GraphQL-y things that you want to do.
Yeah. And people do want to do that, right? Because I don't know, there's the processing is one part of the equation, you know, how am I going to run this app and deal with that? And then state is the other part. And most of that is backed by something. It's not just client.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a pretty big part too. I think a lot of the Jamstack world is just sort of learning this. I'm really happy though that it's moving quickly to a higher level of abstraction. So rather than dealing with a database, you know, people are suggesting now bring in a headless CMS. And I think that's great, because for 99% of use cases, just use the CMS. Don't try and build your own. But there are a whole bunch of use cases for fun things where you do want like a short-lived key value store for doing like real-time stuff or doing caching. We're using Dynamo, weirdly, perhaps, to store a cache map of our modules that have been bundled. So we bundle all of our modules on the fly and we fingerprint them, but I don't want to, you know, have to like re-render all my markup every time. I'd rather just render that as it goes out. And I don't know what the fingerprint name is. So we put those in Dynamo and we pull them out on the request, and it's great for that. It's kind of like using Redis. That's cool. Yeah.
So if I am like, I'm just going to use the headless CMS, are you even saying, and also let that headless CMS keep its data wherever it keeps it?
Yeah.
Not necessarily. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's an awesome shift. Like, you know, I guess WordPress was kind of the original headless CMS. It just wasn't really designed for that use case. But yeah, we, you know, I don't, you've probably seen this a billion times, but you're building an app and eventually it just hits a point where you need to give non-technical people access, and, you know, markdown files in a repo is not going to fly. And so now are you really going to rebuild WordPress? Like that's nuts. Don't do that.
Don't tell me it's nuts. I'm doing it. I'm good.
No, there's starting to be CMSs though that are like, let's put a CMS on top of that. You know, like let's like don't give up on the markdown files. We'll build a CMS that edits those markdown files, which is very clever too. But it's funny how that stuff is all shaking out. But yeah, I mean, Contentful is a big player in headless CMS. If you use that, your data is on Contentful. It doesn't sync it back over to your DynamoDB through Begin. You know,
like true. Yes, like
the data is just somewhere else. And then if you use Sanity, Sanity is a big cool player in all this, where you kind of model out your own data and it has a bunch of cool tools. But it's your data is on their servers.
Yes, yes, that's true. That's the trade off people have to make. You know, when you're inviting these third party services, you gotta be aware of that risk. But I think it's pretty tenable and easy to move generally these
days. Their primary goal, you know, like that's what they do in the world.
Yeah.
Make sure your data is all, you know, so that it's not, yeah. A lot of the serverless stuff is about that kind of trust, that shifting trust to.
Totally. I think that's kind of the crux of the issue. It's like, you know, who do I trust with this stuff? And a lot of people don't trust Amazon, and I don't blame them. That's fine. Azure is probably a good option. Venture-backed startups, yeah, there's some risk there, no doubt. That's why we're, you know, totally open core and want people to be able to deploy to their own AWS. We don't want that exception.
Just, this is all fascinating stuff. And so, you know, we've also mentioned before about how different some of this future architect stuff can feel, and how more connected it seems that they truly are. So hosting a, you know, a little function that gets invoked to return stuff feels like the opposite of Jamstack. Jamstack is like, oh no, you don't have to do that. It's already pre-rendered. It's just a file. And you request it from the server and it's just a file. But the file exists because some build process ran and made that file. Some build process that asked for some data and found that data and pre-built it into some stuff. And similarly, that cloud function is like going to go ask for some data and return some stuff. Yeah. So it's like, as opposed as they feel, kind of, they're really actually pretty similar. It's just like when that build process happens.
Totally. And Netlify gets that. I mean, they've got a functions product too, based on Lambda, of course. And
they do.
Yeah. I don't know if this is like going to be a thing or if people are even going to use the term, but we've been using the term progressive bundling for what we do with Begin. I have a blog post cooking about this, but we write just plain, totally plain Jane, nothing fancy about it, basic JavaScript with ES modules. And locally, when we develop, the waterfall happens, and that's good. We want that so that we see what's going on.
And
we
so can, import. And if there's an error, it tells you what file the error happened in and that stuff.
Yeah. And so like local work, you know, you feel that waterfall and it's like, oh, this sucks. But when we deploy it, the endpoint that you get when you're on staging or production will look to see if we have that module bundled. And that endpoint is just a Lambda function with rollup in it. And if we don't have that thing bundled, we'll bundle it. And then we'll do a redirect to it. And then we'll, you know, forever that's serve wild. That thing forever. And it works great.
You know, you don't pre-bundle it. There's no process that's like, then run the bundling for the entire app and deploy that.
Right.
It's like it bundles on the fly as it needs it. That's wild.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of our devs was like, why don't we let the computer do this? And it's a good idea. I think they're right. These computers, you know, are for us. And we can abdicate that build step to AWS and let them run it. Doesn't have to be the individual.
Does it save
developer.
You some deployment time? Because you don't even build at all?
It totally does. Our lead time to production is under a minute. And we've got 400 Lambda functions. So it's an impressive iteration speed. And I'm not saying that, you know, you need to be to production in under a minute. And I'm not saying you're bad if it takes longer for you. But do consider the faster lead time you have means more iterations. And more iterations means more chances to get it right. And more chances to get it right means higher likelihood you're going home at 5 and or not having an issue over the weekend or being able to patch something right away. So it's just more agile and feels a lot closer to what the ideal state of this would be.
Yeah, there's always, I don't know, competing feelings there. You know, like that's not particularly Jamstack-y. That, you know, that's, there is no built file that's just sitting there. It requires some computer to calculate it and serve it. But if that's super fast and that has other interesting advantages too, and it's super cached anyway, because it's sitting in front of these, you know, fancy CDNs that we have these days, what's the difference? The difference isn't that different. You
know? Yeah, it's same difference. And I imagine after we get this blog post, that it'll probably help explain the pattern a little more, because it's not a technology, it's just a pattern. And it's just using HTTP 302 redirect to do the job. So I imagine people will build implementations on the other.
It feels clouds. Like a paradigm shift, though. Like, I get you didn't invent anything to do it, but you, like, people aren't really doing this as far as I know, you know?
Yeah. No, a lot of people are living in their Webpack world, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it wouldn't be nice if you could do all of that without any of that. And just, you know, enjoy the platform for what it is.
That's really getting you thinking about Lambdas then. If you're using Lambdas for that, and you're using it to serve some HTML for your app, and you're using it to process some stuff, and you're using it for your CRUDed functions, and you're like, oh my God, I built this whole dang thing with little tiny function guys.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's also drawbacks, certainly, you know, like now there's lots of functions. And if there's lots of functions, that means there's probably lots of dependencies. So each one of these Lambda functions has its own dependency tree. And you got to manage that yourself. Someone just sent up an example of an app using Lerna to us. And we're like, oh, yeah, that'd be really nice to be able to NPM install to all my functions at the same time. Because currently, the way we've been doing it at the beginning is we'd go into each function and we would, you know, manage that ourselves. And with 400 functions, that can be tedious. Mm. And the flip side of that, though, we have, you know, really strong CI/CD. So we know when things are going out of date and we're staying on top of it. And we're really controlling the payload per function. So if I have a dependency in one function, I don't necessarily have it in another function, which means I have less surface area for exposure to security risks and less surface for problems with cold starts. So it's a trade-off, you know, it's a management trade-off that you have to be aware
mm-hmm, of. Mm-hmm. So deployment-wise, your own app's got 400 of them, but chances are on a commit to master or whatever, you changed like 3 lines of code in one function or whatever. You don't have to think about it, right? You just commit the thing and it just figures out like, oh, just this one changed. I'll just deploy just that one.
Exactly. And we also allow for what we call dirty deployment, where you can overwrite a single function from your local machine. And generally, we don't use this very much, but occasionally you'll have a situation where you want to patch something really fast, not wait for the deployment cycle to go through its thing. You know, that whole 10 seconds might be too long. Maybe you're iterating on like copy on the homepage and you're on looking at staging and you're just being lazy. You can just knock that one function up straight up to Amazon and it'll do the thing. And single function deploys usually complete in sub-second. It's just like that, and it's online, which is
unbelievable. That's pretty rad.
It is.
Because I feel like, you know, serverless is a little bit of a competitor of yours or whatever, but they don't have, as far as I know, they don't have like a hosted thing quite like this. You still have to like, on your local machine, you still like write a little script to use their technology to send the thing live, right?
Yeah, they went wide early. And I feel like this was actually a mistake we made with PhoneGap. And I don't think it's a bad thing to do. They've obviously got way more adoption than we do. And it's kind of growing into the most popular choice because it's so wide. So if you need to get on Azure, or you need to get on Alibaba, or you need to do a K8s thing or a Knative thing, serverless has you covered.
I see. They went wide with different things they support.
Yeah. Okay. So they support all the cloud players. Whereas Architect, we have focused almost exclusively on being a web developer experience on Amazon. And we're just trying to make that great, because right now that's a big enough problem to solve.
Well, then you can solve more narrow things. I just mean, if you want CI/CD with serverless, you got to write it. You got to go find that elsewhere and then make serverless part of that CI/CD, right? You don't just get it.
No,
like with Begin, you just get it.
I think they have a product now for doing it. And I probably, it's totally cool. And like, I'm not, I think people should evaluate it, you know, like go check out the other ways of doing this stuff. The good news is the fastest thing you can do is check out Begin. And then you can go see how long it takes to do the other ones.
Yeah, there you go. Try Begin first.
Cool. Yeah.
What, I guess we maybe need to start wrapping up. We're hitting time here, but like, you know, serverless, let's go, let's do it. I'm in. Like, what's my next step? What do I like do for the app I'm working on, or what kind of roadblocks am I going to hit next?
Nobody's green fielding, right? What do you do with your existing?
Yeah. My recommendation to people is to start real small and just start eating that elephant one bite at a time. It's a very big world to move to. It's a complete paradigm shift for sure. The common one that I hear stories about all the time is somebody brings in a cron lambda or a scheduled function, and they use it for like database backups or something like that. And they just take a server down that was previously doing some kind of long, you know, timing task, and they replace it with a function. And maybe if that's looking good, find some other small project to just peel off a little piece of, like, you know, maybe you can throw up a GraphQL endpoint for your current REST API or something like that, just like small side project type thing, and then see where it grows from there. If you try and like do a big, we're going to rewrite in serverless, that's probably not going to work out, because there's just so many differences between the current way that we think of our architecture and how this stuff works.
No, that's very cool. I'm excited, and you know, I just set up like a GraphQL thing, and I should have probably used Begin. Oh well, we'll figure that out after the show here. Brian, thank you so much for coming on the show. Yeah. Really though, like your experience with PhoneGap and stuff, like I feel like you anticipated the mobile explosion there, and like, so it's cool to pick your brain and see that you're excited about serverless, and it makes me think I should get on this because Brian knows how to pick them.
Thanks, Dave. I think I just got lucky last time.
For people who aren't following you and giving you money, how can they?
Oh, they should go to begin.com. They should sign up and build an app. They can tweet at me. I'm Brian LaRue on Twitter. And let me know how it goes. Let me know what was bad, please. Good is also nice, but I like to know how we can improve. And if, you know, signing up for a thing on the internet seems like a big ask, go check out arc.codes, arc.codes. That's the open core. You can npm init Cloud Functions app in about 10 seconds locally. And that's the development experience, working locally. And then you can commit code, and we'll deploy it to Amazon for you. If you want to like go to the final boss and get that stuff deployed to AWS, it's not too bad either. And the community there is big and thriving and happy, and more than happy to help you out if you run into problems getting on Amazon, or even if you just have questions.
No, that's cool. Yeah. Architect. Yeah. It makes me, it's like, oh, I get this. I understand. Now I understand how this all goes together. So Very cool. All right. Well, thank you again, Brian, for hopping on the show. And thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcatcher of choice. Be sure to star heart favorite up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one, because people want to hire people like you. And Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
Shoptalkshow.com.